made. Hunker down, they research we all day. To then wow till the morning hour in the dark. Out of the basement, journeys upon which you don't embark. Stark contrast to this.
Hey everybody, it's a Thursday, June 28th, Jumpcast, the only manga podcast that has been upheld by the Supreme Court. Joining me this week is regular Greg Jan and guest Emerson Pugh, who you might know on the platformers as Hanku.
Gentlemen.
Hello, folks.
I got that right, right, Pugh?
Yeah, you're actually one of the few people that get it off right to bat. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. There's somebody else I know that had that last name, but I can't remember who what his first name was. So
it's not super common.
All right, so maybe he's related to you.
Nah.
I was hoping a good transition there to Bleach, but I mean, nothing really transitions well to this Bleach.
So, guys, disappointment.
The general theme of Soul Society at this point. So the guy tries to contact Ichigo, and he contacts Urahara instead.
Because they realize that the method of contacting Ichigo is kind of not with him at the moment.
Yeah, he left the badge back on regular Karakura Town. So they contact Urahara, who explains that Ichigo is fighting a Quincy at the moment, but his Bankai hasn't been sealed. And Urahara ascertains that they are the Shinigami in Soul Society are having big problems with their sealed Bankais. And I don't remember what else happened, if anything in this manga happened.
Well, I mean, they took out the captain guy. Now, technically, it wasn't Ichigo who killed him. He just kind of, through the process of fighting him, made him into the state where Urahara took him out.
That was a really cheap shot, in my opinion.
Well, that's Benihime for you.
Yeah, but it just... It ended so quickly.
Yeah. It's like they forgot about this fight and just had to come back and resolve it.
Yeah.
But Ichigo then took the call. And that's basically the long and short of this chapter.
A phone call was made.
Yeah, it's Ichigo receiving a weirdly out-of-date cell phone.
Have the Quincy talked about their powers?
I don't know if I would call it weirdly out of date, because Japan still is big on the flip phones, aren't they? They're not as big on the touchscreens yet.
I suppose. What are we saying?
The blood vein, blood artery, was that mentioned before? Because that's
the different things that he was talking about when...
He was talking about Ichigo, yeah.
Yeah. He like, has to shift his power between... The different ones where the power and speed, I guess. So it's sort of like he can, it's almost like going back to Dragon Ball Z, the Ascended Saiyan versus Level 2, if you guys remember that, where one of them was powerful but slow, and the other one is faster and inevitably more powerful as well. But
or just it's that more like it fighting stances, really. That's what it reminded me of. Like in fighting games where you can change the stance of your character.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've established basically that Ichigo is special, and that's why he's winning. It's the same thing in every arc.
The question is, how is he special?
There was a great theory posted earlier.
The one about his mom being a Quincy?
By Robin.
Yes.
Which, now that I'm thinking about it, it's
depressingly
it
realistic. Yeah. Because what arc, except for the most recent one, has Ichigo not somehow been in some way related to the people that he was fighting?
So, Ichigo is now human, Shinigami, Fulbring, Wizard, and probably Quincy.
He's probably half black, too, at this point.
No, the series doesn't have blacks, they have Hispanics.
What was Don Kanoji?
Oh, yeah.
There was a black guy in Juegomundo, I thought.
I was just trying to make a reference to Chad there. But,
So, basically, Ichigo is special for some reason, and that's why he's going to win and save Soul Society. The question is, are they going to just have him save it outright now, or a hasty retreat, and then come back and save it?
I think it's going to be a hasty retreat with some people dying, because I don't think they're going to do all of that build-up and then have nobody die.
I don't know.
This is Bleach.
Yeah.
My main question is, why have they not involved Ishida in pretty much any of this? It seems like that's kind of a no-duh character introduction, right?
Well, he specifically said that he wasn't coming to Hoikamondo, so I'm going to guess that there's something that his dad told him about what was going on, and he's either going to show up as part of the enemies, or he's going to attempt to infiltrate from the other side.
But he wouldn't know that they're there.
Well, no, I think that his dad will have informed him.
Right, but the dad wouldn't know either, because they went on a whim, because Ichigo was first came to Hoikamondo. I feel like him now is going to be badly thought out.
No. I mean, I think that the bad guys, the Vandenreich or whatever, are going to have been in touch with Ishida's father.
Eh.
I don't know. They seem pretty separate for some reason. Like, if these guys were around, why didn't they talk to each other sooner?
Well, I'm going to guess that, and this is just kind of, you know, pulling this out of nowhere, I'm going to guess that they're somehow going to tie this back into, you know how there was the entire thing about how there was the war previously and they didn't kill him, which is how he's able to come back for this entire thing. I'm going to make the conjecture that whatever happened in that war, that was the same thing that caused Ichigo's father to leave Soul Society and cease being a captain and whatnot, and come to the world of the living.
So basically just tying everything together?
Yeah, like, I think that that's going to be the manner that they manage to tie that back in.
I don't know if Kubo is that good.
That's the reason that... okay, so the reason that Ichigo is able to help them is because he's done his final Getsuga Tensho or whatever it is, which his dad knew how to do because that's what his dad had to do the last time to save Soul Society. And so he had to leave Soul Society because he no longer had spiritual power or whatever, and so he went to the world of the living. There you go.
That's logical, but that's exactly why I don't think it will happen. I feel like it's just going to be, Ichigo special. Hooray,
yeah, Kubo doesn't really look back too much in his manga to look for foreshadowing events.
Yeah, he kind of just sort of makes it and decides, oh, I'll look at it later.
But it's but the logic behind it is entirely plausible, so I'm going to go with that.
I mean, the logic behind a lot of things in Soul Society is entirely plausible. Why have we still not heard from the, what do you call it? Soul King. Not Brooke.
I'm going to guess that because he's pressed for time, I'm now starting to think that they're just going to completely drop that entire side plot line thing, even though it seemed like the direction the series was moving in previously.
Do you think they're going to let him come back with like a spinoff? Because that's not unheard of in this industry.
I'm wondering if maybe, like, if he does come back with a spinoff, I guess they would put it into their monthly magazine or something like that, because giving him four times the amount of space, you could actually feel like something's happening every chapter.
I mean, they let Watsuki rewrite Kenshin essentially for their monthly.
I want a Kenpachi spinoff.
Yes. I want Kenpachi in the regular manga too. Like, one of those would be fine.
He has to show up in this arc because of the whole Bankai thing.
He got
right?
a panel. That's pretty much been it this arc so far.
Right, but I feel like, you know, if there's any faith to have in Kubo anymore, that his whole Bankai story will come up later.
Well, it's like you said, Kubo does not look back that often. And logically, Kenpachi should be basically ripping everybody apart, but, you know. All right, any final thoughts on Bleach?
No.
It was a necessary chapter to happen if they wanted to keep things moving at a reasonable, I won't say even an expedient pace, but at a decent pace.
See, my issue is there was 17 pages of this, and it could have been condensed down to 3 with really no real loss.
Regardless, it was still a fast chapter for Bleach.
Yeah. But it brings back memories of the days when Bleach, you could just thumb through a chapter in 2 or 3 minutes. Oh, well, okay. On to Beelzebub. Which is the, I guess, not quite conclusion, but probably penultimate chapter of this arc.
Maybe.
I don't know if it's going to... No, I think it's going to last a little longer than that.
I mean, they won the bet.
They won the bet, but the end of the chapter seemed to be implying that there was something else that this person had that was going to be going on. I think that this is going to segue into something larger.
So yeah, me too.
Kugeyama is Himekawa's Furuichi, his former best friend, and they went to different schools.
Except
so this is what would have, this is what would have happened to Furuichi if he hadn't stuck with Ryoga.
Right. He is the leader of this school and thus poised to be the leader of Japan. So I'm guessing probably kind of important.
Maybe. Just maybe.
And we finally get the answer to what it is they're looking for, which they kind of just drop out of nowhere. It is the devil's portrait or demon's portrait.
The which demon I'm going portrait. To guess is an actual literal portrait yeah. of the demon lord.
And apparently possession of it will either let you become crazy rich or kill you. Which I'm not sure if that's tied to any particular old Japanese legend or just something they made up for this.
Either one seems completely plausible.
Yep.
Yeah.
So Himekawa makes the deal that if Oga can beat their prize fighter, crap, what was his name? J.J. Elric. Yeah.
That was weird.
The main star of Fullmetal Alchemist. Then they will give him the painting. So Furuichi decides to bet 500 yen on the odds of like 33.74 to 1. And basically makes a fortune off Oga kicking him once and winning.
So Furuichi now has over a million yen, which is probably more money than he's ever had in his entire life.
Yep, which I assume he's going to lose it somehow.
Oh yeah.
Because Oga makes the bet that he wants to take on the guy that slammed Furuichi's face in the food earlier. And they, like, if he does that, then he'll buy him lots of delish bars.
I really liked Furuichi betting on Oga with all of his money, just because it was like, Furuichi still thinks Oga is his friend, which is kind of nice.
Well, also, he knows Oga can't lose.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's true. Nobody else. He's one of the few people there who actually understands exactly how powerful Oga is.
But I just thought it was a really nice moment of friendship, even though Oga probably doesn't give a damn.
I don't think it was friendship. I think it was opportunism.
Either way.
Though they both seem to be like couching their, or Hilda and Oga at least, seem to be couching their winnings in terms of how many delish bars you can buy.
Because that's what Beals wants.
Yes.
That's what matters.
I think that's how he's going to lose the money. Hilda's just going to make him buy delish bars.
It does seem like interesting that they go out of their way to show how much Beals is becoming like Oga. Because there's a point where Oga's like, who the hell is this guy? And they go to translate what Beals says. It's basically, who the hell is this guy, basically.
And also, where's the plot going?
Yeah. Because they're both kind of calling out the fact that this is just leading to fights. So Oga beats him, and he says, you're next to the... I'm going to guess magic guy, because there's no way otherwise that he's going to beat Oga.
There's probably certainly something special about the guy that we don't know about.
Which I'm expecting that, what's it called? Himekawa's friend does.
Yeah.
Wait, not Himekawa. Yeah.
Kageyama.
Kageyama, thank you. And I think that it... I don't know, in the second to last panel, if it's that man, I don't know whether they're referring to Oga, as in they had heard of... Like, I'm thinking with the entire devil's portrait, maybe they've actually heard of the fact that, because he's connected, he knows about the fact that the demon lord's son is here, and they're referring to Oga as in, oh, he's the protector of him, etc. Or whether they're referring to the person that Oga challenged.
I think it has to be the person that Oga challenged, otherwise they would have, they would have said that earlier. I think the person Oga challenged is going to be weirdly strong, because that's the way this works in shonen anime. I don't see... Like, there's no way this arc continues with him just hitting him once.
Or maybe
Of course it's not going to continue with him hitting him once, but maybe... Or it could continue with, okay, Oga KOs this other guy, and then the prime minister's son or whoever it is wants to employ him for something or something like that, and it'll go off in that direction. I think that this is kind of like a like mini arc leading to something larger.
Maybe it's a secret hidden tournament arc they're doing.
I can see that.
A fight club? No.
Well, a Yu Yu Hakusho dark tournament style thing.
But really condensed.
Yeah.
You know, in the style of Beelzebub.
Because this manga is not afraid to wear its Yu Yu Hakusho inspiration on its sleeve.
I still think that guy looks like a girl.
He does.
He does.
Intentional to some sort, because he chose the path Himikawa didn't.
He's really pretty.
The secret best joke of this chapter is that the Demon King wants a painting that will make him rich. As if he's,
according to legend.
Well, I mean, it obviously works.
Not necessarily. Maybe he was already rich before he got the painting.
Eh. Well, he was friends with Himikawa, and Himikawa thought this school was, like, not good enough. Or too hoity-toity. So I don't think they were there yet.
Well, yes, they were in the middle school that was going to lead up to this school or something.
I don't think it was like the middle school was the same income level at the time. I don't know. I'm sure we'll get some explanation of why he wants it.
It's really hard to predict where...
Oh, no, we're not going to get any explanation about the Demon Lord's reasons for anything, I don't think, ever in this series for the most part. He just does what he does because he's Satan.
I could see them pulling all that stuff together at the end. Like some forward thinking. I wouldn't put that past Beals.
There's something more to the portrait, just because before this arc started, there was that one page of kind of like a mysterious demon person who wasn't the Demon Lord wanting the pain.
It was the Demon Lord, wasn't it?
No, because the joke is we never see his face. And
we're just saying that, and I mean, we didn't see the entire face. We saw the, you know, lower half of it.
Yeah, you see the chin.
Eh, okay.
But they refer to him as Great Demon Lord.
Hmm.
So we'll see.
So it turns out that Demon Lord is a title that is kind of like a Kami in Dragon Ball, and then there's going to be the Kais and everything else.
Grand Kai.
Yeah.
All right. So, any final thoughts on Beals?
I thought J.J. Elric looked like a guy from a fighting game.
He looks like the guy from Virtua Fighter. I can't remember his name. But he looks exactly like him.
And I liked Oga calling Ishiyama retarded Ishiyama.
Well, they realize it too.
Yeah, and that's why it's funny.
I think find it funny they all hate Ishiyama, but they're still, like, they push on Ishiyama pride occasionally. Like when Furuichi got them to play Call of Duty. Alright. So that's Beals.
Yeah, they hate their school, but they still have, you know, their certain amount of tribal pride.
Well, we all have that feeling. Like, I didn't like my high school, but, you know, you still go cheer for it.
I guess.
All right, so
I was in the marching band, so it was kind of not a choice in my part, but you know.
Same.
Marching band manga podcast, really moving up on the world, aren't you?
Oh yes.
All right, so on to Barrage, which manga sites are still insisting on calling Bulge, and I kind of wish they'd just move on to the English title.
Yeah, just actually change it, but. Whatever.
So I feel like this is the first really, really good chapter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the first thing where all of the individual parts that were done well seem to come together.
It was drawn really, really well.
And I think it proved that he can do fight scenes now. Like, yes. That was kind of a concern for a while, because, like, he'd have a couple of panels of fight scenes that inevitably just end with the orc being stabbed into something. But this was entire, like, 19 pages of fight scene.
Yeah. And I was able to understand what was going on, which with some manga I just can't follow.
I mean,
as well,
even great manga like One Piece gets really visually confusing sometimes,
right?
But this is one where like a guy is literally made of rock and it's still incredibly obvious what's happening.
Yeah.
So basically Bulge and Tiamat are fighting the rock alien. What was his name? Doomrock? Dead
Isn't
rock
it,
dead
like
rock
gri- Dead Rock, yeah.
I called him Rock Face.
So he's absorbing rock whenever he gets hit. He doesn't have a weak point in the eye, or at least not one that, like, Tiamat can hit. And yes. The only way they can really hit it is if Barrage somehow, or Astro, sorry, somehow hits him, like, without him realizing it.
Yeah, with the org in one of his weak points, which Tiamat has come to the conclusion that because of that it has to be either his head or his heart, because he can replace his other body parts.
Right, because Tiamat shot him two places. He shot him in the heart and shot him in the head. And he went through way more effort to defend the head, which was a good plan. Like we talked about last week, how they've actually been pretty good about revealing their plans. And this was a surprisingly smart one. So the Dead Rock decides to subvert this by attacking the hostages.
Which I found a bit strange, just because he was able to get so close to them.
Well, I think they were there the entire time.
Huh.
And the women went over to the husbands.
I don't think that these are necessarily the ones that came in with them. I mean, obviously there's a couple of them, but I think that he already had some people who were in his place that, you know, he was torturing the one person when they came in, if you recall.
Right.
And I think that there was kind of like a corral of a bunch of them right near him or something like that. And that the others that came in with Astro and Tiamat kind of ran over to them and maybe were in the process of trying to free them or something along those lines, but were still close to where he was at. Yes, in one of the pages it shows them in like straight jackets and stuff like that.
And he's like earthbending around them.
Earthbending.
So what they, like, I assume this is going to be a theme for this manga, that the guy, or Dead Rock, makes Astro choose between saving the hostages and giving him the org. And Astro chooses to save the hostages because shonen manga protagonist. You can't really have one that's going to choose to let them all die to kill the Dead Rock.
I don't know. Oga would.
Oga would save them both by accident, which is kind of what happens here.
Exactly.
He inspires the hostages so much that they attack Dead Rock themselves. And with that, like, split second of him being distracted, Oga is able to stab him in the head.
The problem with that is just you can't keep doing that chapter after chapter after arc. It'll get really boring.
Yeah, like, it was good for this early in the series.
Right.
Kind of as a growth moment, if you will. It's not something that will hold up its impact with repetition.
I think they're going to have to do one where he does it and it doesn't work out for him.
Oh, yeah.
Because they can't have the whole thing where Tiamat is basically constantly wrong about this. He has to be right at some point.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it kind of kills the whole student-mentor relationship. But yeah, so
Tiamat cannot be Worf.
Yeah.
I really like Tiamat, just from a character design standpoint. He looks great. I love the goatee.
I'm hoping the next time they do an official color.
He looks
color.
Nice, and he, like, at least from a, you know, physical fighting point, he appears competent. It's not just kind of like they're talking about how great he is and he takes out a bunch of mooks. Like, in this fight even, he showed a great deal of competency, which is something which is often lacking in a lot of series, is that there's people who are talked up, but then they just kind of like one shot or something like that. They don't show a lot of necessarily skill.
Right. You get the feeling if he had the org, all the problems would basically be over. But he doesn't, and he has to train the person who does. I am hoping next time they end up doing a recolor, his colors have changed. Because it's really hard for me to see him as redheaded.
Yeah, he's blonde.
Yeah. He looks like Viral from Gurren Lagann. That's all I can see, mostly.
Yeah, I kind of... That's my mental image as well. Now, if it gets an anime and I start watching the anime, then I'm sure it would, you know, fit in. But, yeah. And I just want to say, I love the last panel. That is a really, really solid last panel.
Where he's just stabbing him in the head?
Yeah.
It's really 80s shonen anime. Like, that's the kind of panel you would see Toriyama do occasionally, back during the Dragon Ball days. Which, now that I think about it, that comparison's probably not all that bad. Of, like, the young kid who's being taken on a world tour and has a long pole-like weapon.
Which is even greater because the series also reminds me a lot of like Dragon Quest games.
Yeah.
Which Toriyama draws.
Well, I mean, right now we're getting
So you think that it might be possible that the mangaka who made this was inspired and grew up with Dragon Quest and Dragon Ball?
That's what I'm saying, that, like, this generation of mangaka is probably going to be influenced by the same things we were when we were kids.
Although I would say we're probably starting to hit ones that were influenced by One Piece, which, if, you know, they're able to step it up above One Piece the way that One Piece did over Dragon Ball, I can't wait to read that series.
That's just so crazy.
What was that last One Piece poll that it was like, not like 80% of the people who read the manga are over the age of 19?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like significantly skewed towards an older audience, which is kind of funny when you think about the demographics that Shonen Jump is supposed to be trying to
Well, it's not surprising. Like, if you've been running a manga for 15 years, the people who are really into it are obviously going to be the people who read it from the start.
True, right. Yeah.
One thing I noticed in this chapter, and this could just be, you know, a one-off line, but Doomrock says that Tiamat's moves are inhuman, and I'm maybe, you know, going with the possibility that he might be an alien.
That wouldn't be a bad twist, actually.
That, right. Like,
the king found him or at some point.
Because you're in this world full of aliens. Might as well.
Yeah, no, that didn't occur to me. And it's the sort of thing where I think that it's possible he might, that might be one of those, like, seeding something in so he can go in that direction if he feels like it at some point in the future.
Right.
Not necessarily having made the decision at this point, but it's the sort of thing where people can go 100 chapters down the line and look back and there'll be a whole bunch of these little things sprinkled in that kind of, sort of, maybe could be interpreted in that direction.
But, I think it's going to depend a lot on the character's popularity. Like, if he becomes the shonen icon for this our manga, then I don't think they're going to change his species.
I think, you know, I don't know, Piccolo's species was kind of changed at one point.
Yeah, but that was...
Well, yeah, crap. But I mean, they took, like, every person who was a major person in that series and went, by the way, you're all aliens.
Except for the people who actually looked it, like Tenshin Han and Chiaotzu.
Yeah.
Like, you're somehow still human. We're not going to explain why, but it works.
Well, no, Tien had the whole, like, Buddha exposed third eye enlightenment thing. That's what his third eye was about.
Yeah.
I don't think it was an actual physical eye.
Explain Chiaotzu.
He's a Pokemon.
Eh. Well, Pu'ar's a Pokemon. And they never explained Pu'ar either. Just flying, transforming cat.
Yeah. Or Oolong.
Oolong was just a pig.
That transforms.
But talking and transforms and...
Oh, I forgot about his transformation.
All right. Is there any final thoughts on Barrage?
Next week's a wrap-up chapter, and I think it's going to be one of the ones where it, like, concretely ends, and we have no idea what's going to be coming next.
They really need to stay away from the capital now, I feel like, because if they keep going back, it's just going to seem really repetitive.
I'm going to call it now that when they do go back to the capital, it's going to be in flames.
That'd be cool.
I could see them making it home one more time so he can see how his, you know, adopted children are adapting to life in the palace.
Yeah.
Before seeing everything go up in flames.
Plus, the little girl is adorable, and I think he realized that goes to ratings. I'm curious in 8 weeks how this chapter is going to be voted on.
I think that this one's going to do quite well. Yeah. I'm honestly kind of interested because I think it's 2 more weeks until we get the first rating on this series.
Yeah. I don't see the first couple chapters doing well. Because the first couple chapters are kind of boring.
The first one itself was pretty good.
Yeah, with the prince getting shot in the head.
Yeah, I'm going to guess it's top 5 for its first chapter, and then it'll drop off from there and then start building back up.
Right. I think, like, I'm mostly curious about this one in particular, because this is the one that, like, I've cemented as a fan of this now.
So. Me too. But, like, last week and the chapters before, I wasn't really into it. Like, I knew it was drawn well, but it just seemed really...
Standard. It was very standard.
Soulless. Yeah.
You were reading it based off of the implicit potential, not based off of the inherent quality.
Right. The main reason I was interested in this is because Jump seems so confident in it. So I was curious why.
Yeah, I'm actually trying now to think of, with Bakuman, for the series that got accepted, don't they have to have a bunch of names to submit, like, for the first X number of chapters?
I think it was, like, 10 or something like that.
Yeah.
I think, no, they only did 10 just to show that they could do it. Usually it's just, like, 3 or 4.
That's right, yeah.
But I remember, even in Bakuman, they were saying that, like, a manga becomes more, like, at 4 or 5, that's where the actual battle starts for survival. Like, they're not going to cut it off before that. But after that, it's like, you have to justify your existence every chapter.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think it's going to happen in the next chapter, but I do think that within the next arc, we'll probably, this being a shonen anime, I think we're going to establish another major character of the cast who will end up traveling with them.
Yeah.
Or at least a recurring character.
Or at least Tiamat will get some emotional backstory. Because remember, I went all the way back to read the first few chapters of One Piece just to see how that got started in comparison to this. Mm-hmm. And we already had Zoro's emotional backstory.
That's One Piece.
but I'm just, in comparison, it's always good to get an emotional hook in.
Yeah.
True, yeah.
All right, so on to Naruto. And the first panel of this looks incredibly creepy. So Itachi and Sasuke are about to make out when Itachi disappears. And, I mean, the rest of the chapter, we can bother to describe, but I think most important is that Madara does not care that Ito Tensei has been released.
Yeah, because Madara is, like, the most broken character in the series, and that's saying something.
Yep, he is overpowered as a character trait.
Yes.
And now
that
he's
is
more...
his defining characteristic, and it really makes you want to see the first fighting him, because how ridiculous must that have been?
Yeah, if the first defeated Madara, who has literally found a jutsu to defeat death.
I guess to be fair, we kind of did see the first fight back against when he was fighting the third, and it kind of wasn't anything like this.
Well, he was holding back, I guess.
Yeah, maybe he had some semblance of control.
Right. Madara
wants to
do this.
I do think that the Reika no jutsu or whatever it is Tsunade's boyfriend, who can, you know, miraculously then travel as a soul flying around and give them chakra, is kind of...
stupid?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I saw that and I was like, okay, jutsu is just magic now. There's no skill, it's just magic. Let's just drop the pretense.
Because that's essentially what he did. He disembodied and then went to Tsunade to give her power to dodge one of Madara's attacks. And then they have a nice little chat.
And then another near makeout.
Which, I mean, despite it being about Tsunade and him, I feel like the conversation was implicitly about Naruto. Like, not specifically about him, but that's what Kishimoto wanted us to take from it. Because he was like, oh, you need to support the ninjas that inherit the wind or whatever. Or inherit the spirit of this.
Yeah, I took their conversation as being about the two of them. With the entire thing about how, like, oh, being Hokage wasn't my dream, you were, etc.
Yeah.
It
gave Tsunade closure. So now she won't die.
Well, now that she has closure, she can die, right?
Yes.
Well, now that she just got, like, a power-up, sort of, I don't think she's going to die right away now.
Why does his soul have chakra, now that I'm thinking about it?
Magic!
That shouldn't work, because they're specifically things within the body. They've explained this a million times.
Magic!
So in other words, you're just waiting... You're just waiting for somebody to point at one another and go, Avada Kedavra, Emerson.
Yeah. Now, I mean, we already have super immortal guys who's the most powerful, and now he has infinite chakra. We're beyond just skill now.
I do like how Tsunade's boyfriend kissed her on the forehead, and she apparently did the same to him. And that was how she kissed Naruto when... he did the, or he saved her from Kabuto. Apparently they're going with the theme for that.
Sounds to me like you're suspiciously like you're trying to ship them, Imran.
Who, Tsunade and Tsunade's boyfriend?
Tsunade and Naruto.
No, but I mean, that was one of the iconic scenes of that arc. I'm just saying, either Kishimoto doesn't know how to draw kisses, or there's something going on there.
Could be both, or it's just implying that she's short. I don't know.
I feel like on the lips kiss would be a bit weird, maybe.
Eh.
This has more emotion to it because it's
what it looks or like. It was, you know, supposed to be showing the transferal of the chakra, etc., as the diamond reappears on her forehead.
That too.
Oh, that also possible. So after that, Madara basically says, "Oh, Ito Tensei, huh?" Releases the seals, and then admits that now he has no control over what he can do.
Screw your rules.
Yes. So it's going to be 10 times worse than it was before. This is interesting in that I don't know where this fight is going to go. Because we assumed for weeks upon weeks upon weeks that Ito Tensei was going to be released and the Hokages would be saved to the last second.
Yeah, well, and it's not saying that he is uncontrolled. It means that he is in complete control of his body and the person who did the Ito Tensei in the first place can't control him. It's not that he's just going to start moving around randomly.
No, I took it to mean that he has unlimited chakra and he's going to have to release that somehow.
No, it's and a body that can move around uncontrolled, as in before, the caster could have controlled him if he wanted to.
Okay, so the translation
that
I'm reading...
That was one of the things. The
translation I'm reading is saying unlimited chakra, it cannot be controlled.
Okay, the translation I read is, and a body that can move around uncontrolled.
Same, me too.
Okay, so it could mean either one of those things.
So basically, I'm seeing this as, he's immortal, he has limitless chakra, and there is nobody who can control him anymore if they should so want to.
I'm seeing it basically as the way QB Naruto works when he goes too far. Or before this. That he would just go crazy and have to release all the energy.
I don't know, Madara seems like a guy who's really in control.
I mean, he also did lose. There has to be a weak point there somewhere.
But he wasn't immortal and chakra full. Great, great word there, me.
I'm sure he could be
chakra full! So full of chakra.
But this is one of those situations where, like, I don't see how the Hokage is going to do it. The only person I can see beating Madara is Naruto.
But he's otherwise occupied at the moment. Sasuke.
Yeah.
Sasuke's going to show up.
You know, Itachi really dropped the ball here by not thinking about this.
Well, maybe he didn't know.
Either way.
Yeah, I mean, either there's going to be some, like, magic Hokage thing that results from one of them sacrificing themselves, or Sasuke's going to show up.
Nah, because knows Kabuto is going to save them.
Sasuke's probably going to do something with Kabuto.
Well, he's just sort of standing there, still under the genjutsu.
He's going to, like, what was the condition? He is going to accept himself, or whatever it is, to break out of that. And by accepting himself, he's going to reject Orochimaru's wishes to get the Sharingan, etc., because that was Orochimaru's wishes and not him. And then he's going to take Sasuke to the, you know, human bone forest. And and then Sasuke is going to come save the day.
Whatever happened to Sugetsu and Jugo?
They're around someplace.
They had one panel.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Like, they had a panel where they broke into Orochimaru's hidden lab.
And they found that scroll. And we haven't seen them since then, and yeah, they're around someplace doing something. Be inside characters.
I like that even though Kabuto is in the first page, I still don't care about him. I've completely forgotten about him.
I think he was cooler once he did the snake summon, and then he got progressively less cool with each preceding chapter. Because, I mean, once you found out his backstory, it's just like, no. This
Big Nose Kabuto,
cool.
you're done.
What a way to ruin a character that no one cared about in the first place.
I really hope we see Big Nose Kabuto later on.
He'll be in, like, the montage final panel.
Be one of Naruto's Anbu guards.
Yes. He will be the head of the Anbu.
Well, someone's got to now.
Yeah. That'll probably end up being Sasuke.
Actually, yeah.
I'm actually being serious in that seems like an interesting, reasonable position that, assuming everything goes for happy ending route, that where he would end up is that he's the head of the Anbu.
Be Naruto's bodyguard.
Or, well, actually, I guess it would make more sense for Sai to be that.
Sai kind of f***ed off.
Where did he go?
He fought his brother.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, they haven't seen him since. So, any final thoughts on Naruto?
Madara will kill 2 Kage.
I think the Rock Kage is pretty much dead.
Yeah.
He got a backstory, there's no point.
I could also see, sad as it would be, the Kaze Kage dying and Killer B becoming the Kaze Kage.
I see that.
Then again, I think it's also possible that I could see Kaze Kage, or I could see Killer B dying in the course of the fight. So,
I think it would kind of diminish Naruto becoming Hokage if all his friends also became Kages.
Well, no, Naruto's never going to become Hokage. He's going to become the, like, Kage of the unified thing, because they're going to decide that dividing back up to the things will perpetuate war, etc. Somebody else will become Hokage.
Or they'll make one village of a bunch of different ninja. And Naruto will be Hokage of that.
Sasuke will become Hokage.
Sasukage.
Oh.
Alright, so on to One Piece. And this week's cover picture was Zoro and Sanji having a race while carrying a hare and tortoise.
And get it? The hare sleeps.
Oh, I get it.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, he's not sleeping. I'm just saying that,
like, that's why
he's on
Zoro,
because Zoro sleeps all the time.
I like how they've pulled guns on each other. Because Oda couldn't just have, like, a normal picture.
Well, of course not.
Yeah.
Why would you want one?
That was one of the things that was great about that movie that, you know, you and Mike have still not watched.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Emerson, have you watched Strong World?
No, I haven't watched any of the One Piece movies.
What is wrong with you guys? Watch movie 6 and movie 10. Those are the two best ones by far.
Movie 10.
Once you get used to manga, it's very difficult to go back to anime.
There is a scene where, for no apparent reason, all of the Straw Hats have guns. And
oh,
it's
that's
kind of
that
funny.
One.
Yeah, and it was in the previews and stuff like that, but it was kind of funny because, you know, Zoro's has 3 barrels and stuff like that.
That's because whenever Oda has someone in a suit, that means they have a gun.
And they're all in mafia outfits, yeah.
Yep. Like that one guy who was just a bunch of tiny mobsters. Like, that was his devil fruit power?
Yeah.
He was made up of, like, mobster Pikmin. Alright,
that would make a great game.
This starts with, we see the person that Law was confronting.
Yes, Mystery Man, and depending on the translator, Virgo or Welgo.
I'm gonna go with Virgo.
Me too.
Because Welgo's stupid.
Sound better now. I mean, these guys have been wrong with some of the names in the past.
But... Right.
Yes, whose devil fruit power is to make food appear out of his face.
Oh, yeah, because it looks like just a piece of steak is stuck to his face.
Yes, grilled steak.
Yeah.
I like how no one at all points it out.
Well, this is the kind of I couldn't follow this conversation too well either. I guess he's just sort of, like, talking at Law, and Law is attempting to kill him.
Or Law is attempting to move, period.
Well, he says something like, I'll have to make you disappear. And then just could not quite make it. Like, I guess he gets hit by Virgo's cane?
Which is hakied, yeah.
Oh, is that what
it's called? It's a bamboo stick that he imbued with armament.
So now I'm kind of thinking that maybe Luffy takes out Caesar Crown pretty early on. And this guy's actually the main villain of this arc.
I don't know necessarily if it's that. Like, okay, so in the exposition dump at the beginning, we established that Monet is not actually working for Caesar. She is keeping tabs on him, which makes me think that these are both of them are subordinates of that Joker person, whoever they are. Which there was someplace I read a theory that it's going to end up being that this is kind of like a an underground, not necessarily mafia-esque, but kind of like a criminal underworld sort of thing that's in the New World that's also, you know, has people in position in the world government and something like that. And this will be starting to scratch on the surface of something like that that'll be a long, multiple arc sort of thing.
Oh, so I was thinking it was a world government guy.
That's also possible because the world government kind of is a criminal organization. But
maybe they're a criminal organization in employ of the world government.
Yeah.
Both. There you go.
But yeah, anyway, he had a bamboo stick, which depending on, you know, how he got that, maybe it is that he can make food appear or something like that. And bamboo is eaten by some stuff so he can just, you know, I don't know, make organic material appear. But he it appears that he imbued it with armamentaki and hit law and he's bleeding out of his eye. And they know each other from somewhere.
It's implied they know each other before Law became a
Chichibu Kai.
I say warlord just because it's easier.
Yeah. It also makes sense because, you know, people say the, you know, seven Shishibukai or whatever, but seven is part of that name, so it's like the 7-7 warlords.
That actually sounds cool.
Yeah.
The 7-7 warlords.
So Caesar Crown has basically knocked out everybody.
Yeah, which I'm going to guess that it's something like carbon monoxide or something like that, like a gas that is invisible that was knocking everybody out. Just a personal conjecture.
The question is, who can beat him now?
Luffy, obviously.
I can see Luffy's tolerance going up after this.
So, oh, I think it's going to be Smoker. Like, he's
going to
get
He's going to rebane his body, yeah.
Yeah.
And that'll look really cool because you have, like, two essentially gas people fighting each other.
I could see that happening.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to be killing anyone. He's just kind of dragging them off somewhere else.
So he can experiment on them, obviously. So this will be an opportunity for him to experiment on people who have been body switched.
Clearly he hasn't talked to Moria, because that really never works out.
If you have, but anyway, so they drag off both Togashi Smoker and the Straw Hats. They don't seem to care about anybody else.
Yeah. And he points it as a victory of defending his men.
Yes. And he also recognizes that apparently the Yeti Cool Brothers were not strong enough to take out both the Straw Hats and Law.
How did he tell Law was betraying him?
Well, I don't think he knows that Law was betraying him. Didn't Law say that he was going to go hunt them down or something like that when he left the last time?
I don't recall.
Maybe he does, or maybe he does know that Law was betraying him. I don't know.
But yeah, so Sanji Nami dives into the poisonous river to gather the torso.
Yes, and succeeds in doing so, and then is able to, apparently Nami's body is capable of sustaining the, you know, whatever is needed to be done to do the blue walk where he can jump through the water.
Right. I think that's going to come back as something critical for Nami or Sanji, because he points out that he doesn't know if she can take the stress, so I imagine either before or after they switch back, something is going to go wrong.
Or, I mean, it might be the foundation of teaching Nami how to fight. Because she pretty much just uses her weather magic. They may, like, now that they know she's capable of more, they could actually get her involved in fights.
Maybe.
Anyway. Yeah, it's either one of those two directions. Either something is going to go critically wrong, or they've now established precedent for the fact that Nami's body is not incompetent, like, is rather resilient and could potentially be powerful.
Right. So they reconnect Samurai Guy, who, to get all the slime away from him, decides he's going to use his fire sword technique, And as they established a chapter or two ago, fire makes these things explode.
And then he cuts the explosion.
He cuts the explosion, which is an incredibly cool thing to do.
We should also note that he is huge.
Yeah.
He's 1.5 times bigger than Zoro.
And Zoro is apparently very impressed by him. So I'm guessing he's not going to join the crew because A, that's too many swordsmen, and B, he has a son.
I think he's going to, he and his son are going to temporarily join the crew until they get back to Wano or whatever it is.
I would like that.
And I think that his son is going to end up sticking with the crew, being the final position of cabin boy. Because if you recall, Roger's crew had Shanks as, you know, the cabin boy, the small guy. So that's really the only crew position that's not filled at the moment.
I don't know that they're going to add someone else right now. Like, first arc... Well, not first arc back. First actually good arc back.
Oh, I don't know what.
Although I guess they don't have a helmsman either, but whatever.
Yeah, I think he's going to teach his techniques to Zoro.
Or Zoro will learn by observing.
But that's basically the long and short of that chapter, that he cuts the explosion in half and Zoro's like, well, that's pretty amazing.
Yep. And so now it looks like we're kind of almost into another segue period, which I thought we were done with that with this arc, but apparently not.
Are they having another segue period? I thought they were going to the facility.
Well, they are, but the point is they're, you know, not exactly close at the moment. Law is down, but the other guy... Well, actually, no, we didn't see Virgo leave. So I thought he was going to be leaving Law there or something like that. You know, the Straw Hats are... The other part of the crew is being captured and taken inside. It's a moving the pieces around sort of place.
Right. But, I mean, Law is somewhere where Chopper is nearby.
Oh, true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. He'll
is Chopper going to wake up in time, or...
Well, Chopper's awake.
He's looking for information about the candy, right?
Right. He's trying to find medicine that will, work, like, heal them. So, I'm sure he's going to stumble across Law, or Virgo is going to stumble across him.
Seems like a reasonable assumption.
Yep. Though I do agree with the segue part in that since Luffy and Co. are knocked out, this is not going to end anytime soon. Like, they're going to have to break out of wherever they get put.
It seems kind of weird that more people are now imprisoned again. It's just like they keep getting caught.
Well, this is them shuffling the groups out. Or it's kind of shuffling the groups out.
Obviously, the Straw Hats need to always stick together and never split up. And that's what this is showing, is that they're at their best when they're all together.
But that's also kind of boring.
Anyone. Yeah.
Because they did that in Fishman Island and nobody really cared. Gonna insult Fishman Island every week.
It was so bad.
It was really bad.
I really love One Piece. Like, I only just, I guess, when Impale Down was going on, that's when I started getting into it, just because I put it off because it was so huge to get into. And I love it to pieces. It's my favorite shonen manga ever since Bakuman ended. But I could not enjoy Fishman Island.
Yeah. It was one of his rare misses, but thus far this is pretty great, so at least he's making up for it.
Yes.
Definitely.
So I am more than satisfied with this arc.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on this chapter in particular?
I really like that even though... Oh my god, I forget his name. Oh, Brooke. Brooke would be probably really good against fighting the slimes if he thought at all about how to approach it, just because he can't be poisoned. But he doesn't.
We don't know that he can't be poisoned. He eats, he breathes.
He has no organs, though.
He wasn't knocked out by the knockout gas in the beginning.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So...
Plus he has ice powers. But nope, they decide that cutting through the explosion is the more logical answer.
Definitely.
Brooke's not one to think things through.
When are explosions not the solution?
Most of the previous chapter?
Yeah, but if you fight an explosion with an explosion, you're good.
Yeah. All right, so...
And I mean, it kind of... I mean, in its own way, it kind of does make sense, because, I mean, that's what they do to put out oil rig fires and whatnot, is explosions. Cut off the oxygen access to the fire. The fire goes away.
Important science lessons in your jump cast. All right, so anything off next week?
One sec.
Besides you, Greg.
Yes, I will be absent. Doesn't look like anything is off. The lead page will be another new series that Takamagahara that was mentioned last week. Yeah, and Assassination Classroom started this week, and I think we're going to at least check out the first chapter once that gets a translation.
Yep.
It looks kind of crazy. And yeah, none of the series that we're reading are getting center colors or anything like that either.
All right, I forgot to mention, this has been our 6-month anniversary podcast.
Hooray!
Yay!
And Mike would be here, but I kind of forced him not to be. Because
you hate it when there's four people.
We had a scheduling mix-up. So I was like, one of you has to take a night off.
Everybody thought that I was gone this week for some reason, even though last week after we finished, we discussed it and you guys were like, it's the 6-month anniversary. You should totally come out and you'll be packed and everything else like that. And they don't remember this conversation at all.
Nope, not in the least.
Oh, right. I have to start a rivalry with Mike because of the fact that we're not on the same podcast. So Rock Lee called. He wants his eyebrows back.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Oh, now, if you really want to start a rivalry with Mike, we should talk about Nisekoi now.
I'm not going to have that on the podcast.
I initially enjoyed it because it was funny, then it just got bad.
If we're going to be bringing any awful manga on this podcast, I insist it be Fairy Tail first.
Oh, no.
I still haven't read that.
It's delving into the line of creepy now.
Creepy in which way?
Because there's a little girl character and all the covers are fan servicey, but then they put the little girl character in one of the fan servicey ones, and dialogue's like, "I'm not ready yet," and then at the bottom left corner for this fight. Yep.
Yay. I just looked it up. Oh dear.
It's actually a decent manga.
Straddling a teddy bear?
Yep. Straddling a teddy bear. It just, I guess, the things you do for votes.
No thanks.
All right.
Well, I suppose that other magazines also do the voting thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, so this has been your Thursday, June 28th Jumpcast. We've made it half a year, so here's looking forward to the next half.
Yep, amazingly without missing a week, so.
Greg, thank you for coming. Emerson, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll see you guys next week. Except for you.
So, Konoha Council approved of Obama Kage's mandate that every unit should have a medic ninja.
Oh, God.